podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap. This might seem somewhat unlikely. Earlier today, at 11:18, we effectively started the Anfield Wrap after Salzburg came through as Liverpool's opponents in the last 16 of the Champions League. We chatted for 10 minutes at the start of the Anfield Wrap about Salzburg versus Liverpool. We were really pleased with the draw. We weren't that committed to the idea of a trip to Salzburg, but then Mike Gerling made the point about the wider world and where that would be at that sort of stage. All very, very fair from Mike. We got on with the show. We talked about Aston Villa. We looked ahead to Newcastle. We ended the show. We come out from the back of the show to find out that the draw might not count. So John Gibbons, it's fair to say the Anfield at Mondays for all of us are finely calibrated machines. It is fair to say that, and it is fair to say that UEFA, in amongst all of this, the grist in the Anfield Wrap mill is absolutely enormous, but all you can do is laugh.
Yeah, it's been a mad Monday, hasn't it? To throw all that in, obviously, you know, you mentioned Mike talking about the way the world is. We've sort of started a mixture of sort of home and office working at the moment, so we've got different people at different times. So a normal Monday is busy, but this time it feels like even more like you're trying to plan everything and people not being together sort of if they need to be, and all that's gone to pot as well, to be honest with you, because, you know, it's sort of all hands on deck trying to make things happen and try to do everything that we need to. So yeah, it's been wild. I'm sure, you know, we're not the only people pulling their hair out.
And everyone's grafted brilliantly. I think on this, what I don't want to do, we'd rather have had Salzburg. I'm looking at the Inter Milan team here. It looks like a good side. They are the champions of Italy, the back top of Serie A. So they're probably better than Milan and the players. You know, at the weekend they had Handanovic in goal, Skriniar, De Vrij, Bastoni at the back, Dumfries right wing back, Perisic left wing back, Barella, Brozovic, the Turkish lad whose surname I can't see the end of, which is annoying, Martinez and Sanchez. I know who the Turkish lad is, I've seen him play football. These are good players on the bench there as well. They've got Kolarov, they've got Dzeko, they've got Fischino, they've got Ranocchia, they've got Vidal. This is a better side than Salzburg, let's be clear about that. But the one thing I haven't quite got the energy for, John, is to be absolutely livid with UEFA in that, yes, they've absolutely cocked up in front of the whole football world, but that should probably sort of just be the end of the matter. I think Real Madrid have got more to be cross about than Liverpool.
And Real Madrid will be cross, yeah, because they got a nicer draw.
And they were out first before the controversy.
Yeah, and so they'll be full of grief too. But for Liverpool, you know, we could have got into, you know, first up, you know, that can sort of happen. You know, it is a draw. Salzburg would have been nice. Inter Milan instead will still be favourites to beat them. I mean, some of those names, you know, people recognise. You know, I feel like we've been playing Dzeko in the Champions League since we went back in it.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, which is a bit wild. But, you know, a lot of those, you know, it's an aging team, isn't it? You know, you talk about Alexis Sanchez, you know.
It's a team they haven't been able to refresh.
Yeah, exactly. And so they aren't out top. I've just said on a video that AC Milan were top, but I've noticed that they've sort of fallen behind it. Inter sort of replaced them. A couple of eye-catching results, you know, recently as well. You know, they won 4-0 at the weekend, but the one against Roma, I did see. We're always a little bit on Jose watch, aren't we?
Yeah.
And, you know, to go to Roma, a decent team, and beat them 3-0 was very impressive. But Mike made the point on the now defunct, you know, Anfield Wrap intro, but that I will sort of steal with a side credit to Mike, is that, you know, you don't know how the world's going to be, you don't know how team's going to be. So where Inter Milan are, you know, sort of going into this game in February in terms of, will they have fans in the stadiums, you know, what kind of form will they be in at sort of that time? We don't know really the sort of last draw that you have, where it's, you know, it's effectively a couple of months until the games, and so we'll see where both teams are at by then. But it's an interesting one, you know. I mean, everyone enjoyed the San Siro, didn't they? They were all sort of buzzing off at everyone who went, and so maybe the same people, but hopefully obviously some new ones will be able to go and enjoy that magnificent stadium again. And then it's second leg at Anfield, which is bigger as well.
Yeah, I think it helps us second leg at Anfield. I think the idea of you not knowing quite where we're all going to be at that stage, I think that is something to remember. There can be injuries for us and for them, but I think also there are variables in the way in which, you know, football operates. Form does come and go for some players. I don't think it looks like this season Mohamed Salah's got any interest in that. He's not interested in your form appearing and disappearing. He's very, very committed. But other players as well in there. I think it's a heftier tie, and I think we have to acknowledge that it is a heftier tie. And I think, you know, if Liverpool are frustrated internally, I'd quite like this is why it's important to be able to laugh at things, I think. I think this is why it's important to be able to go, you know what, Sam, we'll just beat anyone. You want to do this, do this. You want to get the draw wrong, so it's harder for us. All right, get the draw wrong, so it's harder for us. Watch what we do next. And that's what I think this side's been really, really good at this year. I mean, for God's sake, they managed to get a deal with Stuart Atwell at the weekend and his vicissitudes. You know, there is, I think, this side at the minute, you get the impression they'll just shrug it off, they'll just laugh about it. I'd like to think so anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they should do it. And look, there's not a huge discrepancy as well between, you know, if we'd have gone from the, you know, the real outsiders, you know, somebody just snuck through, everyone's wondering how on earth that's happened, to a situation where suddenly you've got the toughest team, you know, but there's one brilliant side, if some manage second or finish second because they had a really tough group, and then you've got them, something like that, you know, you would be sort of feeling,
but you beat them home and away.
Yeah, this situation, you know, it is a tougher draw, but it's still one that we'll fancy ourselves. You know, yes, they've gone above AC Milan in the table now, and you said the squad on paper looks a little bit better, but they'll be thinking, well, there's similar sorts of that Milan side, we've just beat them home and away. They'll be feeling good about it, you know. It's the other side of AFCON, you know, and so there's, you know, interesting sorts of things there in terms of, you know, you talk about not knowing what we're going to be here in form and things like that. There's a lot happens between now and then, but listen, we're in it, and you know, you made the point before on some content which we might put out otherwise, I don't know. We're in this tournament to win it this year, and that's the focus. You know, I love the Mo Salah interview a few weeks ago where someone asked him about goals, and he said, I want to win the league and Champions League. That's what I'm doing for. Yeah. You know, and however many goals I get is fine. I know Jürgen Klopp is so focused on getting this Champions League back. You know, it's driving all of them, you feel like, at the moment. And so these are all, I think, to management and players, just sort of small points along the way of where they think they need to get to be and where they're confident they will get.
So what's going to happen now, if you're watching it as a video, we will probably put either the opening credits on or just dive into the room. If you're listening to this as audio, we will suddenly be in the room with Ian Ryan and Mike Girling. Thank you very much to them, and apologies to them for cutting their absolutely epic, tremendous, honestly, the things Ian Ryan knew about Salzburg.
Girling made some great points.
Yeah, honestly, you should have seen them, should have heard them. It was a delight, but as it is now, they're going to instead get stuck into the mire that was Aston Villa at home. It wasn't a mire. Liverpool deserved to win it comfortably. All of that is to come in a second or two. Thank you for being patient. Not just with us, but I think in general with everyone in the wider thing here today. It's been one where, you know what I mean, Red Men did the first one live, and I was thinking, oh, poor Paul and Chris there, they've gone all the way through, probably stopped, and then someone's gone, lads, we might need to come back in here.
We just put them all out together in 50 years, like Get Back.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that we're self-aggrandizing or anything, just to be crystal clear. So ultimately, now the Anfield rap's going to start, but as John was saying, we're in this for one thing and one thing only. And that's that Liverpool win the Champions League. Move on, and we'll talk about Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 0. And John, it's a solid win that ultimately could have been more. I think you live those games, and when you're living them and you're seeing a bit of Aston Villa pressure, and they did put the pressure on, I thought, quite impressively, from about 75 to 82, 83. They penned Liverpool back. I'm sure that all of our inner chimps were out. I know mine was. But ultimately, they don't really test the goalkeeper bar that one little kerfuffle at the front of his own box. There's no big save. There's no big chance. Liverpool repel them, and if anything, 1-0 should have been 2-0 or 3-0 rather than 1-0 should have become 1-1.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, he only tested himself, really, Alisson, at the weekend, didn't he? Maybe just wanted to live in his afternoon up a little bit. I mean, you look at what Villa do in that 7 or 8 minute period and think, well, maybe they could have had a go earlier and stuff like that. But I think what we need to sort of, you know, get used to a little bit more, and it happened at Wolves last week, is teams are just frightened of us, you know what I mean? And it's good teams now. It's not just, you know, the bottom of the league coming to Anfield, you know, and not just at Anfield either. It's, you know, Wolves are a good side. They played us at home and they were terrified. And Villa was the same, do you know what I mean? Gerrard was going in stuff, thinking, I just don't want to get walloped. I just don't want to get walloped. And so, you know, he was almost chipping at 1-0. And he also had we could have had a penalty as well and stuff like that to go for. You know, he'll feel that's a win for that team, do you know what I mean? Just going there, you know, especially so short into his reign. And so I think we're, you know, unfortunately gonna have to get used to a lot of spoiling tactics, a lot of teams just trying to sort of ruin the game as much as possible because they just want to get out there without a hiding. And I think, you know, that's what us as fans will have to start getting used to a little bit more, but also, you know, obviously the players, and I think they're dealing with it, do you know what I mean? They're finding ways, you know. It's mad weather at the moment as well.
Well, I was gonna throw that over yeah.
Yeah, both games as well. Jürgen sort of been banned from talking about the weather by the English press, hasn't he? But, you know, they'll be onto it, and so it's tough at the moment. So grinding these 1-0s is fine. That's what we're doing. We'd all like a more comfortable last 5 minutes than what we got. But at the end of the day, it's keeping these wins going, and it's a tidy little run now on the sly, and it was a big December, and we're 4th on 4 for it, and that's great too.
The weather was
I think, again, and it does feel like Jurgen's been banned for talking about the weather. I think the extent to which the weather plays a part in that game, in every single sense, I think it's part of why the referee is absolutely dreadful, to be honest with you, is that he can't quite work out what's what with the way in which the weather's impacting the game.
He's slipping and he's not, yeah.
The way, I mean, I know where you sit, Mike. So the wind, very gladly, from our point of view, was going in the opposite direction. Literally, people in the main stands were getting drenched as the wind was getting blown that way. It was pouring down. The weather was a massive factor in the game.
I think so. And something I don't know if you boys noticed, but the ball wasn't rolling properly on the pitch.
Yeah.
The ball was sticking. You could tell it was getting biffed by, you know, really twatted by Thiago and stuff like that. And it was just dragging on the grass. And I think that had a big impact, especially around the box where we are super fast.
Yeah.
I think the weather had a massive impact. That game is the sort of game that we'd normally win 4-5-0, I think. But it just didn't quite happen at the end, because I think defensive midfield, we were just really, like, you know, world-class in terms of domination. But it just didn't quite happen right in the final third, and that could be a lot to do with the speed of the pitch. But I thought, separately, it could also have had a lot to do with Chamberlain as a number nine. He's not a number nine. And so, you know, the movement's slightly different, the spaces that are taken up are slightly different, you know, and maybe that was it. Maybe it was just something as simple as that, right, you know? But it's like I say, on a normal day with that kind of relentless pressure, I mean, it was like Rourke's drift for most of that game in terms of just powering on top of them. And it was like they're going to fold at some point. I was always confident they were going to fold at some point. But I just think maybe it was just one of those two things, or probably those two things, which meant it wasn't an absolute battering.
Chamberlain toils, Ian, he really does. He doesn't shirk. He's showing for the ball all the time. But as Mike says, I actually think you get to see, and it's quite rare to get a genuine case study of something in football that works with no mitigating circumstances, where you get to see the difference between a number nine who can act as a bit of a false nine and do loads of good attacking midfield work versus a good attacking midfielder who just doesn't have number nine instincts. In a really basic way, there's a point in the first half where Martinez is time-wasting after the ball's been passed back to him, and Chamberlain doesn't go and close him down. And it actually takes Salah shouting at him to say, go and close him down. And that can sound really basic, but it is as simple as, this isn't normally my job, mate. Sorry, I've forgotten that.
He's probably thinking someone needs to go.
Someone should sort that out.
Why is no one sorting that?
But I think all the way through the game, that's what I got from it, Ian, is that he really was an attacking midfielder pressed into service, not a centre forward who's trying to do other bits a bit better than normal.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. You know, every time I seem to look up and notice Chamberlain, he was so far from the goal. And as you said, you know, when you're involved in the emotion of the game, natural instincts will inevitably kick in and you'll just end up being in places where you feel most comfortable. And I think that's what happens. And listen, it was one that I probably had to go with because Jota wasn't fit enough to start. There was no Origi, and Firmino was on
his way. Do you think if he had a time again, he might do Minamino from the outset?
You know what, he might do, but I think with Minamino, I'm not quite sure he's that either, to be honest, in terms of, I think he's much better a little bit deeper as well. So I know when he was first when he first came in, people talked about maybe being a replacement for Firmino. I don't think he is that. I don't think he's got a lot of the skill set that Firmino's got. I think it's fairly obvious in saying that. And I think he also just likes to drift and get in little pockets and stuff, which Firmino can do, of course, but I think it's having the ability and the awareness to know when to go. We talked about on other shows, you know, I think Firmino's actually looked at a little bit of Jota's game at times and started to put himself in the penalty area a little bit more than maybe he did last season. But he did toil and it didn't really work for him, which is a bit of a shame because he is on the back of a number of weeks where in midfield he's done really, really well. I think on the wider point about the kind of performance that John was alluding to, I was absolutely delighted with the win. I think you look at that game, you look at the Wolves game, and don't get me wrong, it doesn't get any better than going to Goodison or Old Trafford and putting them to the sword. But when you talk about what a title challenge feels like and what you've got to do to get over the line, this Liverpool team, it reeks of it. It smells of a title challenge. To go and do what they did in those conditions, Gerrard talked about in his post-match, it was the one with Michael Owen, and he said he didn't want to go that deep. He didn't want to be that deep. People were giving him a lot of stick on social media saying he's come, he's played negative football, he's done all this, he's done all that. He's been there four games, by the way, before the weekend, so let's give him a bit of a fucking chance. But he comes and he has to do what he has to do because Liverpool are good. Liverpool are really, really good. Without creating tons and tons of chances where Martinez is literally pulling off worldies, we dominated. We didn't let them out. They didn't have a shot on target. It's a really, really strong performance by Liverpool, and Villa could not get out. And that was Gerrard's point. We didn't want to be that deep. We were forced into being that deep.
I just, to your point, no, I disagree with you there, mate. I think Minamino, I'd only want to see Minamino in that position for us up front because I think he can finish. He's got to finish his instinct, but I don't think he's fast enough or strong enough
That's my issue, Mag. He's got a physical presence to be able to do some of the bits you want to have a number nine.
And he can't win a ball back. And he isn't very fast. And I think you've got to be able to do one of those things, really, in our midfield, at least. Probably both. But he can. He does know where the back of the net is. And so I think I would actually play him over Chamberlain in that situation. But I wouldn't have him a regular by any means, but I definitely think he can do a job there for us.
No, I think over, if you're talking about over Chamberlain, then yeah, I can see the sense in it. I think that's the problem with Minamino. Where do you play him? I think he's almost caught between a couple of different stools at times, where he's not robust enough to be in the midfield. But also when you think about a number nine, the things you've got to deal with, physical challenge, you look at him and think, is he up to that as well? He almost fits in between the two.
The thing that happens that's maybe a little bit different, John, from other games this season, I'm thinking maybe about Brentford and maybe a little bit harshly, but it felt to me like a bit of a switch was flicked, where it really was a genuine at 75 when Villa do put the pressure on, Liverpool went nothing daft. Absolutely nothing daft. The number of times Robertson, I think, especially just hammers it into the stand when he could maybe try to pick a little ball out down the line, but he just thinks, no, I'll put that in there, let them have the throw, we get our shape and we'll start again. And I think that you got a bit more of that from Liverpool. I think Van Dijk's got a no-nonsense performance. I think Joel Matip has got a performance that, when nonsense is possible, my God, he's doing it. But he, when he needed to be, he was very, very robust as well. I think even Alexander-Arnold through the matches is prepared to just empty things. And I think that is a little bit of a difference from maybe 8-9 games ago.
Yeah, I think they feel like they're almost in the business at the end of the season already. You know, we've joked about, oh, it's a title run already, do you know what I mean? And it feels like early for it. I think it's starting to feel like that for them, really. They're seeing, you know, what City are doing in terms of, you know, they're on one more win than us currently on this run, aren't they? I think we're 5 in a row, they're 6, and, you know, it just sort of suddenly feels like that to them now. I think, you know, the Milner sub is stinks of that as well, doesn't it? It's like, here's James Milner to come on to kick people and or balls, and he's not bothered which one, you know what I mean? And, you know, he just comes on and just you know, sees the game out, really, like it's a final or a semi, really. And you know, it's great to have him able to do that. But as you say, Neil, the, you know, the individuals on the pitch who are already there have, you know, they've done this before now as well, which I think is worth pointing out as well. You know, they've done a title win, they've done the one the year before, which doesn't quite get there, but still has that sort of feeling of, you know, need to win. You know, there's times, as Ian says, where we'll batter teams. There's other times where, you know, we'll need to grind. But if this team can do both, they'll take some stopping, and that's what you sort of see, you know, at the weekend with them, really, and just winning the battles as well. You know what I mean? And like, you know, the performance wasn't perfect. I don't think it could be, you know, in the situation, but big players won their battles at key times.
Watkins scored 4 goals against Liverpool last season, Ian. Matip, he goes and plays. I think he's trying to play behind Matip, between Matip and Trent a lot of the game. He's trying to get over there and hurt us. Thought Matip was excellent again in terms of both the stride now. So the stride now will always catch your eye. The pass that he's got now, that pass that's either whipped round to Arnold or the one bang into attacking midfielders' feet. You know, these are great passes. But first and foremost, he just plays really well as a central defender. And Watkins gets very little out of him. And as I say, Watkins will have turned up there thinking, I've had the better of Liverpool. I can do this today. There'll have been a real sense of purpose from him. And he gets no change out of Joel Matip.
No, absolutely. And I think one of the good things that Watkins does, if you're looking at it from a Villa point of view, he takes really clever positions at times. He almost positions himself in between fullback and centre-half, where inevitably the centre-half engages and gets dragged out a little bit. He's really good at doing that and then squaring them up. You've seen him do it a couple of times this season. He's had a little finish into the far post. Good player. I think he's looked like he's doing really well under Gerrard. Looked like maybe he was going to, wouldn't say stale, but he'd started the season maybe a little bit slower. But Liverpool handled him really, really well. I mean, I say Villa didn't get a shot on target, which is, you know, testament to how well we did shield the keeper and play in terms of a back four. And I think we talk about the back four. They obviously are all very, very good as defenders. You've talked about Joel Matip's attributes there. He was brilliant again. Technically on the ball, they're all excellent. They're all 9 out of 10. They're all superb footballers. And I think that's what Jurgen Klopp wants from his defence. He wants them to be able to start attacks. I mean, some of the things Joel Matip's doing, I mean, you're just waiting for that moment. And it may come where he's completely just never stops and just carries on going and ends up knocking one into the top corner. There was one on the weekend where he goes so far and he thinks, no one's stopping me. I'm just going to keep going and keep going and keep going. He's got that in his locker. And it is a little bit kind of unusual to see a centre-half doing that in the way he does it. But he does it with such purpose. And as I say, it's something that teams are finding quite difficult to stop, because once he gets into his stride, he's very much into his stride. And it was another really, really strong performance from Joel.
The rumours of Andy Robertson's passing were greatly exaggerated, Mike. Shimikas has put him under some pressure for his position, and the way in which he's responded has been exemplary. He's not quite as integral in an attacking sense for Liverpool as he has been in this game against Villa. But he absolutely works himself into the ground. He makes himself constantly available. And again, not dissimilar to Sean Matip, he wins his battles. Villa will get no change out of him.
Yeah, I think... I think there was, you know, his passing, it's not really passing, it's assists. His passing's fine. It was until we got into the opposition box, and then the assists were going a bit awry, and it was most notable against West Ham, wasn't it? Their best attacks came from his cutbacks, basically. But I think in this game, what was most notable for me from lately is his work rate has gone back up. I think he was probably carrying a knock, to be fair. And his work rate, all their work rate was amazing. As soon as we lost the ball, it was phenomenal to see, actually. And it wasn't just the defence. All the midfielders were on top of them. They never got a second as soon as we lost the ball. And that's great. That kind of, you know, full throttle. It's proper Jurgen Klopp heavy metal football, isn't it, really? It's the what we originally saw when he first came, almost, but we can defend as well now, kind of thing. So it's an interesting development, really, or, you know, in maturity of where the team is. But yeah, no, I think Robertson, his pressing was incredible, his work rate was incredible, and he just wants a few assists now, doesn't he, really?
I think the other thing he wants, John, is, and you know, listen, it's not for me to tell them what they should be working on. The nail in this, Liverpool are on a great run. I'd love them to have a shot back across goal. Oh, yeah. I think there's three or four to
do that. Yeah, and just to that point, sorry, Neil, because Trent does it now. He has that shot, you know, that cross shot across goal, because the worst thing that can happen is the keeper makes a really good save. Or they usually parry it out. It's like a really good percentage shot to have that, the fullback in the box, banging it across the goal. They usually parry it out, the keepers, do you know what I mean? So he's got to start doing that.
Yeah, it's a good point from both of you, because what's interesting is he takes on the header, doesn't he? And the header's like, it's nearer, but it's a harder chance to score from there. And he nearly does creep in because of the deflection, and so he nearly sort of gets a, you know, bit of luck from that. But, you know, I'm thinking there, when it goes to him, like, oh, it's tough to score if, you know, if on your header, that type of ball, do you know what I mean? Unless you're, like, you know, really sort of good in the air, like a Mane or whatever, you know, it's tough there. So he takes that on, but the shots, like, even though it's faded out, it's an easier chance because you're coming onto it, he's got a clear sight of goal.
You can get a touch and get out of his feet.
Yeah, and so it is strange that he's not really, because he can hit them. I've seen him hit more for Scotland, I think, but you know, he can sort of hit those, really. And he felt like it was coming into his game about a year ago, and then it sort of drifted out. And I don't know whether it's just in his head a little bit about a quality of chances, you know, who's there, is someone in a better position or whatever. But you know, sometimes even if you're that far out, if you know, you can get a good strike on it, as I say, if it's open, and it was, there wasn't any defence between him and the goal. And yeah, I think looking back, he probably wished that he hit those, and especially in the, you know, talking about the conditions as well, you know, if you can fist that along, you know, for the keeper, it's a nightmare to deal with.
I want to talk about the big fella at centre half. I didn't even put him on the agenda, which is quite sloppy of me. I was just reading it there and thinking, where is it? There's the question on him. In the same way that I watched Wolves versus Manchester City, and we watched Wolves last week, and a point was made, I think I was watching it with Steve, and Steve said it must be really difficult for his manager, the Wolves manager Largue, to work out where Jimenez is. The sort of injury he had, you know, is that still impacting his game? He doesn't look to me to look like the player he was prior to that, but that could just be the circumstances around him. He's lost Jota, his partner. But he looks like he's lost a teeny bit of pace, and that might be a funny thing to say with a head injury, but he hasn't been able to train. He just doesn't look quite the same player. At what point do we just sort of get to say about Virgil, he's just back to be Virgil now? Because I don't think he's that far away at all. I think there's been a couple of times this season where we've gone, it'll take him a bit of time and all of this. I just saw a Virgil van Dijk performance against Aston Villa there. I saw one that we were seeing in 1920 and 1819. I didn't see anything to make me go, when's Virgil going to be back to full Virgil?
No, it feels like all the bits are there. I mean, you see his contribution against Wolves where he sets up the goal because he plays that ball out to Salah, which, you know, for us, that was a huge miss, not having the ability to get out quickly and spray those passes. He's got that excellent passing range. I think there's been one or two times now where I've looked at Virgil, and it's inevitable, really, that he hasn't looked quite his old self. There's going to be a little bit of, you know, just getting back into the rhythm of things on the back of an injury such as the one he had. I mean, I almost felt like, and he's probably the exception to the rule, really, I almost felt like he may come back and just pick up one or two niggles, because that tends to happen. You know, it's happened with Joe Gomez, it happened with Laporte over at City. You get them back in after the long term and the body's overcompensating and you pull up with something else. But No, not of it at all. He's an absolute machine. And again, he's probably unlucky with his booking, I'd certainly say. At the weekend.
Unlucky with his booking. I mean, Jesus.
I mean, the referee, I mean, he started off poorly and it didn't get any better, unfortunately. And the one that he booked Virgil for, I mean, it may have been a foul, but it was nothing more than that. It was ridiculous from Atwell, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, I think with Virgil as well, we're not just talking about ability, are we? We're talking about someone who kind of sets the line and just sets the tone as well. And I just think there's an air of comfort when he's there. You feel better as a fan watching the game, and I'm sure it's the same for the players as well. Yeah. In terms of what he brings, you know, he's not necessarily the captain, but I think he exudes that kind of captain air, if you like, that captaincy air, that confidence and stuff. And if he's not back to his best, he's not far off it. I would suggest he's not far off it. It was another really, really strong performance. And again, you know, if you're Villa and you come up against the likes of Matip and the likes of Virgil in that form, it's a hell of an afternoon for Watkins. As good as he did, it's a tough afternoon. That
there was someone I saw who'd been to the game and had not been for a while, and I think it was on our Facebook subscribers group. I can't remember exactly where I read it, but they said the biggest thing they noticed from going was Virgil van Dijk, like how good he is. Do you know what I mean? I thought that was quite interesting, really, because, you know, we're all lucky, we go a lot, there's, you know, season tickets and stuff like that. And I'm not saying we take Virgil for granted, because obviously we don't, although, you know, you missed it off the agenda, Neil. but jokes aside, we don't, you know what I mean? We know how sort of brilliant he is, but I just thought it was really interesting that this person, as I say, I think it was on our Facebook subscribers group, did a bit of a write-up of the day and said the biggest thing they noticed, the biggest takeaway for them was the Virgil, like, he's unreal, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? In the flesh, and he is. He's just like, he's superhuman almost.
Did he misplace a long pass?
Oh, the passing was unreal.
Did he misplace one? Yeah. I don't think he did. I mean, can you tell me another centre half in our league who can do that?
But they don't even have to check. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's to feet. It's perfect. It's like 70 yards to feet. Yeah. Can anyone think of another centre half who can do that? I can't. Mm-hmm. I literally can't think of one. And so I think he might well have lost a little bit of pace with his injury, because you usually do with cruciate ligament injuries. You usually lose a little bit of pace. But he can probably deal with that because of the way he plays. He reads the game better anyway. So him more than probably any other centre-halves we can. You can probably put up with him losing a little bit of pace, because I think he might have done it. Don't quote me on that, right? But his passing is unbelievable. He's just as good as Thiago at a long ball, you know, and there's nobody like that. That's like having another midfielder in your team, right?
Yeah.
I like the idea that Virgil somewhere today is now saying to Pep Linders, I want to do some sprints, I've got a point to prove to get. Fabinho has his sort of afternoon, John. There's a chance, again, in a really weird way with last season, in all the ways it was weird, us not being in the ground, being one of them, the defensive crisis. Fabinho was impeccable in his position from effectively the whole of 2019 moving into 2020 when he was fit from a Liverpool point of view. There's a chance, just a chance, he's gone up a level and we sort of all haven't noticed, because either there hasn't been the onus on him around that, but he's coming into the age where the lad who plays that sort of position gets better and better. He might already have been the best one in the world, and I thought Saturday was a really good example, not against stunning opposition, don't get me wrong, but where he just makes it all look so easy.
Yeah, I think he likes this midfield. You know, we've talked quite a bit recently about, you know, the midfielders and who they pick to play alongside and stuff like that. I think Fabinho, he really likes Thiago, and obviously they all love Henderson. And I think he's enjoying himself. And one of the reasons for that is I think he feels like he can go out and press a little bit higher. Whereas before, you know, with how we were playing, I mean, he was playing at centre-half at times last season, obviously. But, you know, how we were playing, but also he was alongside with, I think he felt like he had to stay a little bit. And that sort of limits the Fabinho brilliance, really. You don't want him as, you know, I know they call him the lighthouse and all that, but you don't necessarily want him like stationary sat above the defence. He can do that, don't get me wrong, but he's much better when he's able to just drift a little bit up and go out and press. And I think it's more I'm talking more sort of off the ball here, yep. But obviously, you know, you see some of his clip passing and stuff like that, and it's incredible. But I think, you know, with the other two, he's got a bit more of the confidence to say, well, I'm just going to go out and press, you know, there, lad, get him there. Defensive midfielder's head, he won't be expecting that, and he's not going to like it with his big long legs. And we saw that a few times. There was the one where the Chamberlain shot, where yep. They just go out, and their midfield, by the way, came with a little bit of hype to Anfield at the weekend. You know, people talking about, you know, how good they were, how combative they were.
Yeah, robust. I kept saying it all the way through, a really robust midfield.
But they didn't want to know the other way, did we? And there's one where we press that lad that much, he ends up getting booked, and we still get the shot away. Do you know what I mean? It's like the way, I think that was the Chamberlain one, wasn't it? Where he ends up just having, he just hacks them down, but Chamberlain just sort of picks it up and goes through, and he's actually, you know, you see on the replays, it's much closer than I thought, that one. But yeah,
we match them for intensity, we match them for the other stuff, and then obviously when they do that, the quality just sort of shines through. But so I think all three midfielders were good, but I agree with you on Fabinho, but I think he's enjoying almost the greater protection, which is funny because he's the one who's in the team sort of for that really. But I think he feels like, oh, I can just go out and do that, and if they by any chance do manage to get around me, then the other boys will sort it.
That's our best midfield, isn't it?
I think so at the moment.
That's our best midfield. I don't think there's a better midfield anywhere though. Anyway, you know, it's a midfield three. I can't think of anyone better than that.
I would agree with that, and I think that almost plays into maybe when Klopp was thinking about Chamberlain. I think he's probably aware that he's been in quite decent form, and he's thinking, well, how can I give him a game?
Yeah.
This is an opportunity to give him a game, albeit in a position he doesn't really want to play. But also the conditions might have come into that, thinking, well, Chamberlain's good from 25 yards. It's wet conditions. Now he only gets one off in the end and it goes over the bar. But maybe that was some of the thinking around it. Now, the games are coming thick and fast, so he might get more opportunities. But I think Mike's point there about the midfield, you know, the balance looks really, really good. The manager talked after the game about that balance, and obviously Fabinho will sit deep, you know, Thiago will join him at times in a deep role, get on the ball, do his bits from there. When he's going forward, he's not quite got the license of Jordan Henderson. So the manager talked about Henderson's new role, if you like, when he's able to go a bit further forward and play with Salah and play with Trent much more closely. Left-hand side, it's more Robertson and Mane together as a two. Right-hand side, slightly different. And you see that from the goal in terms of that's the build-up. Those three players, Henderson, Trent and Salah, and that's where the goal comes from when Salah squares up Tyrone Mings. And Mings, I give him a lot of stick on some of these shows because I don't think he's a particularly great defender. But he'd had an okay, if not better than okay, 60 minutes, because he's okay when balls are coming in the box, he can just get rid of them and empty them. That's what he's about. The minute you get good technical footballers in around someone like Tyrone Mings, there's a very, very good chance he's going to do something very silly, and that's what he did. Salah did really well for the goal. He's clever, but that's not to suggest in any way, shape or form that it wasn't a penalty. It's stonewall, it's clumsy, it's brilliant from Mohamed Salah.
It is clumsy. For all we adore the pair of them, Mane and Salah, Mike, they're incredible footballers, but they also don't give defenders a minute's peace with them without the ball on top of everything else. They don't try and glide through games. They're in the muck and bullets of games, and I thought you saw that one there. They're pinning people back, but they just don't let anyone out.
Salah's horrible.
Yeah.
He is horrible. You can't imagine what it must be like to be a fan of an opposing team watching Salah. It's just a nightmare to play against. He's all over you, like all over the fullbacks, all over the midfielders, and he's aggressive. He's a horrible player to play, you know. And he hasn't been scoring goals lately, and his finishing's been a bit suspect, but he never stops. He never hides, which is what's brilliant about them. And Salah's, you know, he's not... He had a penalty, and, you know, his finishing wasn't up to it. We had a lot of chance in the box that we fluffed our lines with yesterday, but they never stop. But of them both, Mane is just... Honestly, you can't imagine how horrible he is to play against. He's just... he's got, like, 10 arms and 10 legs. Do you know what I mean?
If at times, John, you're watching them, and this is where I do have a little bit of sympathy at times for referees even. And as I say, I thought the referee on Saturday was absolutely abject. This is not to stick up for Stuart Atwell in any way, shape or form. But the thing with both Salah and Mane is they are so happy in those conditions. Maybe in a sense at times, it might be even too happy to just go... Let's make it horrible then. You want it to be horrible? You watch this. They put the body everywhere, get themselves in front. And as Mike says, it's at times, Mane especially, but I think Salah does it as well. They're made of elbows. They'll back into you. They'll find little pockets. They'll look to turn you. Then you might nick it back, and then suddenly he's hairing at you, and the best you can do is put it out for a throw. It's a brutal 90 minutes of football, I think, to face them.
It is, and I think you're right in that they relish it. I think they're almost like, you know, oh, these defenders we come up against, they think, you know, oh, you think they're going to be able to kick us, we'll just try it, you know what I mean? And they're coming up against it. And there was an interesting Thiago quote in the week where he was like, I thought I trained hard, but I'm in early every day, and Mane and Salah are in, and then I leave late and they're still there. Do you know what I mean? They're doing the work in the gym, they're toughening up. They've already toughened up, they're going to another level now. Do you know what I mean? They're making themselves even bigger, even stronger, but even harder to get the ball against them. The pair of them are like sort of two forwards in one, really, you know, in terms of what they're able to do. You know, in terms of holding up the ball, in terms of, you know, keeping it, getting us up the pitch. But then obviously once we're there, you know, the flair that they show as well, and the trickery, and what Ian was saying before about the fast feet that defenders can't deal with. They're complete footballers, really. And for the size of them, you know, if Sadio Mane walked in now, you know what I mean, we'd all tower above him, wouldn't he? But then, you know what I mean, I put back all four of us at once to get the ball off him even in a tight space like this, because, you know, I mean, we'd come out better than Bruce.
Yeah. I got my boost yesterday literally, my left arm's not up to it.
It's not up to it, is it?
It's sore. It's very sore, but get your booster. Just on all of that with them, the way in which they are, for me, I thought from a Villa point of view, he said to me, you know, who do you think did the best performance for Villa? I'd say, I think Matt Target played well. The left back, I thought he did really well. Salah scores. He arguably should have another two. He's integral to everything we're doing, that's creative. You know, Matt Target comes away there, and if I was his manager, I'd say, you've done brilliantly. Yeah. And Matt Target might say, yeah, but he's probably their main man. Certainly in an attacking sense, and you're just left where... I think there's times this season where defenders have been putting in 7, 8, 9, even 10 out of 10 performances against Salah, and he's still either scored or assisted, and he's still been Liverpool's most important attacker. That's what I think is really, that's where I think you begin to have messy levels of conversation, where it is the opponent can play about as well as he possibly can, and he still can't get near you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, if you look at any of the team on the weekend, I don't think anyone was kind of operating that kind of, you know, maybe even 8, 9 out of 10. A lot of sevens in there, but you know, again, back to the conditions, back to, you know, it's another game on the back of another tough game at Wolves. But I think those moments, Neil, what you've just described there, that's when the great separate themselves from the good. The ability where, you know, you can't play well every game. It's impossible. No one's ever played well every game. But if you've got someone like Salah, those little tiny moments, that's what it's all about. If you're a really top player, and he is, and then some, and you know, he takes his opportunity, and you know, he wins the game for Liverpool, because on another day that does end up 0-0, and we would have deserved it, but Villa would have been able to say, we went there, we were really kind of, you know, we dug in, we sat a little bit deep, yeah, we time wasted, we did all that, but you've got to do that on Anfield to get a result. But someone like Mohamed Salah makes that really difficult, because he does operate in those moments where he can just completely turn it on, and the left back can have a good game for 80, 85 minutes, and then he'll just do something and you can't stop him. And again, it was another one of those where he really kind of pulls it out for us. And it's one hell of a season. What's that now? 21 goals before Christmas. It's just phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's ridiculous. And just when you think he's got to a level... he almost kicks on again, and it's, you know, he's performing now to levels that I don't think many of us saw coming. You knew he was a great player, you knew he was a good player, but where he is now, my God, it's some performance from him.
I think there's a lot of rivalry between those two. I think it's great management. I think, you know, both of them, they don't have a day off just because the other one's having a good game. They're like, I'm going to do it. I'm doing it. Like,
well, it's like they're both in the gym.
It's like one-upmanship. They're both in the gym. They both play against Milan.
Yeah.
That's mad. You know what I mean? In terms of, you're talking about, they're all in the gym, they're always dead fit, and, you know, their personal approach to the game. They must have wanted to play. Do you know what I mean? They don't want to not play. They even wanted to play in a dead rubber. Like, I thought that was really interesting that they played in that. But in terms of Salah, I think where Salah is right now is, when Robin was at his best, you knew what he was going to do, but you couldn't stop him. And that's what it's like with Salah now. It's like, you know, Robin's going to go on his left foot and he's going to score. And there's all you can do about it. And he's like that, but probably maybe even a level above because of what he does, you know, for the team as well. But every defender in the world knows what he's going to do, but he still scores.
I think, in general, John, it's a good performance from Liverpool. As Ian says, there is a lot of 7 out of 10s, but what there is Liverpool being able to go to a level in 15, 20, 30-second bursts. And that'll stand them in good stead with what's coming next. I think it's fair to say, you know, it is going to be, we know it's a congested period, you can overstate it at times, but they do play, you know, 12:30 against Leeds and 8 p.m. 2 days later against Leicester. They're going to have to be able to find those bursts, I think, between now and the end of the campaign, and they look like they're coming to that boil on top of all the other boils of the brilliance that we've talked about.
Yeah, they're getting a bit better, aren't they, at playing in sort of third and fourth gear. I think, you know, a few of us used to say about this Liverpool team that unless they're sort of, you know, right at the top, you know what I mean? There's,
and maybe even earlier this season.
Yeah, there was times, certainly, where it happened. But I think that, you know, they look like they're managing games better. As much for them, really, because, you know, there's obviously two ways of staying fresh, isn't there? There's rotating a lot, or there's, you know, the players, you know, managing themselves through games, really. And I think, you know, that one, I think Jürgen would almost sort of prefer, really, you know, if we can have a quiet 30 where the lads come off the pitch and go, oh, that wasn't too bad, that, do you know what I mean? I feel like I can go again, or he can make subs and things like that. I think he'd almost prefer that than sort of wholesale changes sort of all the way over Christmas, because he likes the rhythm, he likes them feeling good. He talks a lot about rhythm, doesn't he? And you know, so I think the ideal for us is a sort of a few changes, you know, as possible. Yes, there will have have to be some, and we all sort of, you know, accept and know that. But I think he'd prefer to minimise them. And the way you do that is, you know, getting well ahead in games and being able to take people off. You know, it was the case sort of against Everton, or, you know, having, you know, having games where, like you say, you know, you're choosing your moments, in bursts, and you're not sort of, you know, playing, you know, the heavy metal football that Mike talked about for the whole thing, sort of for the 90. And if we can do that, I think other teams will struggle more, because what, you know, we always say as well, as Liverpool are more used to it. Do you know what I mean? We're playing in Europe, we're going deep in cup competitions, which is nice. You know, whereas with the other teams who are sort of a bit more used to one game a week are suddenly going, do you know what I mean? Now, hang on a minute, you know, we've got to play Liverpool. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We're in a better position to deal with it.
On that, in a second, we'll talk about Newcastle United. I watched them against Leicester, and I can't believe they're going to have to play Liverpool after what they did against Leicester. It feels like it could almost be unfair. Subscribe to the Anfield app if you haven't had the chance to do so. Liverpool flying at the moment, you know that. On all fronts, Salzburg to come as well. And that League Cup game against Leicester next week. It's everything that you could want from a season at the moment, and it is a scrap at the top. All three sides won, all with penalties as well, which people are trying to whip up into a little bit more of a frenzy than I think it necessarily needs to be. If you spend a lot of time in penalty areas, you're going to get more penalties. It's the way in which a lot of this stuff works, it is fair to say. But regardless, theanfieldrap.com/subscribe for that. Download the app. All the other stuff as well, and through Spotify and YouTube if you want to have a little look through those ways of doing it as well. Now, anyone else watching Newcastle against Leicester? Yeah. Just fine if not.
I saw some really poor lowlights.
I'll come to you first then on the lowlights, and then Ian on the lowlights. Leicester set up a lot like Liverpool, and they marmalised them. Every single time they attacked, it looked like Newcastle couldn't cope with it. The screen in front of the back four, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, it's not a punchline. The screen in front of the back four was Jonjo Selvey and Joe Willock. This is, you know, you can criticise those centre-halves, Mike, and my God, we might end up doing that. But the screen in front of them is Jonjo Selvey and Joe Willock. And every single time Leicester went forward, Leicester don't play particularly well.
No,
they win 4-0, and it looks like they could just cut through them whenever they wanted.
Yeah, they're really bad at the back. I mean, they are shockingly bad. They look like players who aren't really Premiership players, to be honest with you. They're very slow on the turn. They're leaden-footed. They're not going to be looking forward to playing us. But like you said, Leicester didn't do much, really. But, yeah, there's some crap in that Newcastle team. Like, real crap players. Joe Linton is shit.
That's really fair. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. I saw quite a bit of the game. And, yeah, you are looking at that team, and it does reek of the Championship, to be honest. He's got one hell of a job on his hands there. You know, the full-backs aren't particularly great. You know, Mankeo, I think, played, doesn't he? I think Lewis is the other side. In midfield, I mean, Jonjo Selvey just hasn't got the legs. He just hasn't got the mobility. And you always feel with someone like Willick, he's better off a little bit further forward. So, yeah, they're in for a ton of time, I think, on Thursday. But it does allow Liverpool to look at it. And I take John's point. I don't want to see loads and loads of changes, because I think we are better as a team when we're in rhythm. But there's the flexibility there to maybe say to Chamberlain, well, you can go again, because we're going to take Thiago out and give him a rest with Spurs on the horizon. If Divock Origi's fit, it feels like a good game to give Divock Origi some minutes, because we are going to need him at some point over the Christmas period, and he's been in really good form as well. And then maybe you do something at centre-half and say to Joel Matip, listen, we want you for Spurs. Canati comes in for this one. So Liverpool can do that without making us that much weaker, so Newcastle could be in all kinds of trouble.
It's the first thing to say, John, is that this can sound like it's remarkably confident. Firstly, we've got every right to be, the run that we're on. Secondly, genuinely, this is probably Liverpool's second easiest remaining league fixture, that or Norwich, and it's much the much. And it looks like Norwich have tightened up certainly a bit more than Howe's managed to tighten up Newcastle so far. Newcastle might also be a different proposition come February and March if they do manage to invest in January, but there are fewer, and you know, it would be a huge... Normally, you know, you've got to find a way to shrug your shoulders and say sometimes it doesn't go for you. If Liverpool don't win this game, it is the biggest clangor of 3 points dropped I can possibly conceive of.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch the game Sunday, but it was a nice reminder just to where Newcastle are just before we played, because obviously they got 4 points from the previous two sort of league games, really. And, you know, we speak to, obviously, Alex Hairston, the dude on the coach home, and he was like, oh, maybe, you know, Leicester are struggling, maybe we can go there and get something, and then they get it sort of absolutely walloped, really. So it's a nice reminder of Newcastle's sort of level. And it's funny in a way, because we draw twice with Newcastle last season, don't we? And the home one, you know, Willock scored sort of right at the end, and it was a bit of a horrible one, that wasn't it, behind closed doors, and then sort of, yes,
the game at their place was horrible as well.
Yeah, failed to beat them, but in a funny sort of way. And look, I'm I know why they've swapped the manager, but they're almost better coming with Steve Bruce on Thursday, because, you know, Eddie Howe, when we used to play Bournemouth at home, I was always like, it's right. Do you know what I mean? And no matter what Bournemouth side came and how well they were doing, I thought, yeah, because they're going to come and play, they're going to have a bit of a go, and we'll be fine here. And, you know, save for that one mad game away where we just sort of throw it away. And we always felt like we had them, do you know what I mean? You know, Bournemouth, because they do sort of allow you to play, really. And so, you know, I don't think he'll come mad open at Anfield, but I don't think he'll necessarily do what you saw sort of, you know, the last two teams we played sort of do against us, really. And I think that'll play into our hands as well. So you're right, Neil, without being sort of too arrogant, it all points to a good night and a good Liverpool win.
They looked to me like they couldn't handle pace coming from wide areas into central areas, and they're about to play Liverpool.
Yeah,
and I was watching them thinking that Harvey Barnes genuinely absolutely murders them about four or five times on the left-hand side.
There's so much space in between their players. We're going to love that, aren't we? I mean, I think Eddie Howe is a bit like John Joe Shelby, like in his head, he's boss. Do you know what I mean? And he picks teams that are, in his head, that's going to be the way to play this game, as opposed to being pragmatic and what have I got? Do you know what I mean? It's what you're saying. Mm. If they should put 11 men behind the ball, basically, when they play on us, but he won't.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Joe Shelby should play a short pass, but he doesn't. He thinks he's Zidane, doesn't he?
John Joe Shelby should not start the game, but it looks as though there's every chance that he will. He'll
take someone out, though. He's a dickhead.
Well, that genuinely, if you're asking me about my concerns about the game, Ian, I don't just mean John Joe Shelby. It's solely the idea that if Liverpool do become as dominant as there's a chance they do within the game, there could be a bit of irresponsibility in there. I'm not just saying Shelby. Mm. There's a couple of those Newcastle players who you've seen throw the odd one in here and there. And that is my sole concern about the match. And that's weird. It should be about the 3 points. And maybe people play this back on Friday and I'll look like an absolute idiot. But Liverpool, for me, you know, whatever team they pick, and I will go relatively strong and look to get people off from the point of view of having an eye on Tottenham. But they should be far, far, far too much for Newcastle to live with.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think when you've got a gulf in class between two teams, then automatically you think, well, their only way home might just be to try and rough us up a little bit. But I mean, that's not really an Eddie Howe team, in fairness. But when you have got someone like a loose cannon like Shelby, he is liable just to lose his head if the ball's just getting passed around him and stuff. And I think that's why I just maybe take someone like Thiago out, because I'm always thinking about kind of his fitness and stuff, and I think he's proven to be so important at the minute in terms of, you know, that relationship with Fabinho and stuff. It's starting to flourish. I don't think it was particularly his best game at the weekend, but I still think there was still flashes there. He still did enough, and you want him for Spurs. So I would be making maybe 2-3 changes tops. And the reason I mentioned Origi, Jota might be fit to start. I don't know where Firmino is in terms of fitness, but it just feels like if you are going to give Divock one, you'd rather be giving him Newcastle or home than say Spurs away, which, you know, you want your big lads back for all your big hitters. And obviously there is Leicester on the horizon as well, so he's got a little bit of maybe jiggery pokery there and stuff. But it feels like Liverpool have got more than enough making 2 or 3 changes to take this Newcastle team to the absolute saw, because there was nothing there. And even the previous performance, they get the win against Burnley. It's not great. No, it's not great at all. And I think Burnley do have opportunities and stuff. And it's probably a little bit hard lines on the day. I mean, you're talking about two very, very poor teams at the bottom of the table. But as John said, and he's right to reference the Bournemouth stuff, it always felt like they played into your hands. It always felt like the system lent itself to how Liverpool want to play. They give you space. They give you an opportunity. They want to try and play a little bit front foot. It all points to playing into our hands.
Scoreline prediction?
4-0.
I go 3-0 just because I think we'll ease off.
4.
Excellent stuff. I'd have gone 4 as well, so it's gone there. And I'm also doing the ease off thing in all seriousness.
I think that's what I call Trafford.
Yeah, the other thing that I think there's a chance of, and genuinely I'd really rarely say this, just what I saw there at Leicester against Newcastle, I think there's a chance that either of the wide lads get a hat-trick. Either of them could just find themselves getting in over and over and over again, and they could really, really punish. I think there's a really good chance either of the wide lads get a hat-trick. Anyway, thank you very much indeed, Andy Heaton, for producing. The good people of UEFA for drawing Salzburg up against Liverpool and starting us the show off there. Thank you very much to Mike Gerling, reminding us the global situation. Good on you, Swiss Mike. Thank you very much to John Gibbons, and thank you very much indeed to Ian Ryan. Liverpool remain on the march, absolutely on the march. They should bounce into and skittle Newcastle. This season is only just getting started. Sports Social Podcast Network.